Hello, welcome. This is the Marvin Bird Show, and I'm your host, Dr. Marvin Bird. I thank you so much for taking the time to download this podcast. You are listening to the first ever Marvin Bird Show. This is going to be a monthly edition just to start out with, but I thank you so much for taking the time to download and listen to me. There's so many other alternatives out there, so many other things that you could be doing, but instead you decided to download the podcast and check it out and hear what I have to say. And for that, I am greatly humbled, and I appreciate your time. So what is there to expect out of the Marvin Bird Show? Well, a little bit about me first. Before I get into that, I am a teacher. I love teaching. I cannot believe that I get paid to do what I do, to work with kids, help them learn and grow as they not only learn about content, but as they learn about life and help them grow to make wise decisions, to help them eventually be good citizens that are going to help this country in the future. And the fact that I get to play a small part in that, it's just awesome. I love it. I love being a teacher. And so after I got my certificate, I went back and got my master's, went back and got another master's, and then eventually I was crazy enough to sit down and write this long paper, and I got my doctorate. And so that being said, I love everything about education. I want to see kids do well, not only my kids, but I want to see all students do well. And so I guess that's why I ended up getting my doctorate, because I wanted to be able to touch other lives, help other students that weren't my own, kind of magnify the gifts that God has given me and spread them out as best I could. And so, that's a good answer. That's why I got my doctorate, and that's why I started Marvin Bird LLC. Marvin Bird LLC is about helping anyone who wants to help students. Marvin Bird LLC is about helping parents. It's about helping teachers and stakeholders, getting them information that they need in order to help students succeed. So here's what you can expect from this show. As I said before, we're going to go monthly. Look for a new episode on the third of every month. And I bet you're wondering why I chose the third of every month. Well, I have some very exciting news to report to you. On the third day of December 2014, my beautiful wife gave birth to our two lovely children, Gavin and Gianna. Yes, we have twins, so pray for us, everyone. Gavin and Gianna were born on the 3rd of December 2014, and so that's why I chose the third day. So look for a new edition of this podcast on the third day of every month. I love you, Gavin. Love you, Gianna. So have you ever seen, I don't know, something in the Huffington Post or in an educational journal, seen an article, or you've gone to some professional development if you're a teacher, administrator, and you've been handed something to read, and it just seems like the reading goes on and on and on and on before you get to the point you can finally draw some kind of conclusion out of it? Well, I've had that many times. And it seems, and this isn't always the case, but it seems that a lot of times the most important information is just wrapped up in a lot of wordiness. And so what this show is about, it's about cutting through all the filler so we can really get to the point and take what we need from it so that we can help our students succeed. And so this show is, it's going to be a forum so we can all interact with each other and you can interact with me. For now, we'll start with, you can tweet me at Marvin Bird. That's with the Y, by the way. And you can also feel free to send me an email, mbird, B-Y-R-D, at visionchasers.com. And down the road, we're going to have guests on this show. And again, my hope is to, through this show, get you as much information as possible. And one of the things that I pride myself on, and this is a tagline of my company, Marvin Bird LLC, is that we're simple, informational, and inspirational. And so all the information that you gather here is going to be something that you can definitely sink your teeth into. It's going to be something that you can definitely understand without a lot of work. And then it's also going to be inspirational. It's going to inspire you to change, to make things happen, because that's what this is all about. And when it's all said and done, our students depend on us to make things happen. So with all that out of the way, here's what we're going to talk about for this first show. And so it was in November of 2014 that I decided I'm going to host a podcast. We're going to do this. We're going to make it happen. And as I was sitting down, I was thinking about, you know, what am I going to talk about? What are you going to do for that very first show? Because, you know, you cannot make a second first impression. And so this is it. This is going to be very important. What you hear from me from now on, it's going to determine if you're going to come back or not. So that being said, as I was just planning, thinking, what am I going to talk about? Some certain truths, certain principles came to my mind, and it just hit me. And as I started writing, it just became crystal clear that, whoa, wait a second. This is my philosophy. This is me. This is, when you think about, if you look at Twitter, if you're an educator, you look at Twitter, there are thousands of educators around the world, and they've got an opinion, and that's not a bad thing at all, but I'm just making the point that there's a bunch of them out there. So some of them have tens of thousands of followers, and so I say all that to say that, you know, as I was thinking about what I was going to talk about in this first show, it came to me that I need to put my philosophy out there. What are the things that I believe as it relates to education? And hopefully you'll find them compelling, and I'd love to be able to interact with you throughout the week, throughout the months, about my philosophy. And so I've got, I've got 6 points here. I have 6 points that constitute my philosophy. And so I will probably, as I look at the time, I am not going to get through all 6 of these in just the hour that we have. But you know what? There's nothing wrong with that. So we've got time. So let's get into this. So I'd like to submit to you that the number one indicator of the success or lack thereof of a school is not the test score. It's not the test scores. In fact, I believe that the number one indicator of success or lack thereof is the relationship that exists between the different groups of people that constitute a school district. And you know these groups. These groups are the students, they're the parents, the teachers, administrators, and stakeholders. And for stakeholders, many of these stakeholders, they live within the bounds of the school district, and some of them do not. And that's okay, because most importantly, they just want the students to succeed. And that's awesome. That's awesome. But here's the thing. Here's why I am submitting this to you, because I believe that over time, what has happened is we've taken certain liberties with the language, and that term school district has been misappropriated. And whenever something is misappropriated, it's taken and used and viewed as outside of its purpose. And anything that's outside of its purpose is never, ever, ever going to live up to its full potential. And so that's why I want to give this to you, and hopefully you find it pretty compelling. And when you look at the school district through this lens, it really helps to crystallize and helps you to understand why school districts fail persistently. We've been doing this for decades now, trying to turn around schools, trying to close the achievement gap. It's difficult because it depends on the relationships of these various groups of people. And that's difficult. It's difficult because you have so many different people that you're trying to get on the same page. It's challenging. So let me see if I can help visualize this for you. So when you think of these different groups of people that constitute a school district, imagine a row team, rowing, the sport of rowing. So you've seen the Olympics where you have the boat, and you have either, I think it's 2, 4, or 8 people now in a boat, and they're all rowing, and they're competing against other teams, and they've got oars in their hands. And the amazing thing about this, when you watch a row team, is that everything is in sync. everyone does the same thing at the same time because they all have the same goal in mind. And they've done this thousands of times before. They've practiced this thing, so they know exactly what they're doing. So everyone is rowing, they're in sync, they're pushing for that goal. Now, here's the thing. So going back to the school district, so for the purposes of this illustration, the parents, teachers, students, administrators, stakeholders, they're all in the boat and they're rowing. Everyone has two oars in their hands and they're supposed to be doing the same thing at the same time, same pace, heading straight for that goal. Now imagine if one person in that boat doesn't do what they're supposed to do. What's that going to do? Ultimately, that's going to put more work on the other people in the boat. Now imagine if two people, now this is a four-man team. So imagine if two people aren't doing what they're supposed to do. So imagine if two people aren't doing what they're supposed to do. That's going to put even more work on the remaining members in the boat. And ultimately, here's what happens. Ultimately, the goal of the team is not going to be achieved because you just got too many people not doing what they're supposed to be doing. It's just so difficult to overcome that. And so I know what this is going to sound like because I'm a teacher. It's going to sound like, though, there's another teacher blaming parents for the lack of academic success of students in failing schools. And that's simply not true. Because what I said was, I said that the issue was the relationship, the lack of a working relationship that is conducive to student achievement amongst those different groups of people. And I can't possibly know what's going on in all these school districts that are experiencing difficulty as it relates to academic achievement. I don't know. But the one truth that I am submitting to you is that the relationship needs some work. And that's all I'm saying. And there are definitely things that can be done. And here's the thing as well. I would say it's impossible. It is impossible for a law from DC or the capital of your state to come down and fix the issues that can only be addressed by the members of that rowing team, the members of the community. It's only the members of the community that are going to be able to successfully turn around a school, period. So, for example, let's look at No Child Left Behind. No Child Left Behind came out in 2002, had these lofty goals for student achievement. Student achievement was going to be through the roof. School accountability, we're going to hold teachers, administrators, we're going to hold them all accountable, and we're going to have rigorous work all the way through, and students are going to excel. Well, what happened? Only, 12 years later, we're replacing it. And I suspect down the road, something will replace No Child Left Behind's replacement, which was Race to the Top. Only the people of the community can fix the issues of the community school. And so there are some unintended consequences of No Child Left Behind, of the misappropriation of school district. So here, the unintended consequences are this. And largely because of No Child Left Behind, you have just a sweeping number of changes. And now, let me be clear. I believe change is definitely good. Change is good. Changes, that's the way you get better. You get better through changing, through tweaking things here and there. Change is absolutely good. But I believe that to change just for the sake of change, that's not good. That's not good. And so here's what happens. And I mentioned accountability before. The people who are looked at in terms of accountability, I believe this is my belief. I'm going out there. This is my belief. In terms of accountability, you just follow the money. Follow the money in terms of accountability. The people who are being paid are the ones that are going to be held accountable because they can be replaced. They can be demoted. There are different things that go on within a school district or a school that is persistently failing. So it's the people who are being paid. They're the ones who are they're forced. They have to make certain changes. And so what's happened over the past 12 years, I'd say, is you've seen leadership changing things. And so they've changed what is taught. They've changed how it's taught, and they've changed when it's taught. And so you have all of these changes taking place again, and, you know, for the sake of improvement. But I believe that not all these changes are necessary. And I believe that a lot of these changes are made because of panic and desperation. And that's definitely unfortunate because you just don't want to see that with a position that is just so important. Our students depend on us to make wise decisions that are going to affect their future. So in summary, when you look at it a certain way, when you look at it my way, you will see that defining a school district is it's a little bit more complicated than initially thought. Everybody has to play a role, even the people who aren't paid by the school district. Everybody has to play a role. They have to fulfill their role and responsibilities in order for success to be achieved. All right, so there's my first point. Before I get to my second point, I want to take just a moment to remind you of something very special to me. Is actually the very first book that I wrote. It's called Make It Plain: Keys to Being a Successful High School Student. And I have it here in front of me. I'm very proud as I look at it. This book I wrote a couple years ago. It's got about 120 or so pages. And it was written, well, first, before I get to that, I want to tell you that in my past 7-8 years of teaching, I've said a number of things to my students to try to motivate them, get them going. I teach at the high school, by the way. So I said several things to students over the years, and I've had many students tell me, Mr. Burr, you should write that down. You should write a book. And, you know, I kind of blew it off towards the beginning. But then once I did get my doctorate, I got a little bit used to writing. And so I decided to sit down and write this book. And what's amazing, I believe, about this book is that it's written to students. I filled it with a lot of personal stories about myself, my struggle in high school, and my struggles in high school that eventually led to struggling in college as well, because I tried, and I did in high school. I took the easy way out. I didn't challenge myself a whole lot. And so I definitely feel that students can learn a lot from my situation and hopefully avoid some of the pitfalls that I dealt with. Definitely motivational book. Again, written to students. It's not too wordy. I keep it pretty simple and just give them plain and easy keys that they can understand so that they can be successful in high school. So again, the name of the book is Make It Plain: Keys to Being a Successful High School Student. The easiest way you can get it is from Amazon. It's $13.46 on Amazon. And I promise you, if you've got some sort of after-school program or during the school day, you have some sort of character development program where you need possibly some supplemental material, I guarantee that if you pick this up and you put this in your plans, I'm sure that you will be happy that you did so. And there's definitely a lot of conversation topics within this book. So definitely. Again, name of that book is Make It Plain: Keys to Being a Successful High School Student. I would appreciate it. Go ahead. Again, Amazon, Barnes & Nobles, wherever books are sold online, you can find a copy. But I would say the easiest way you can grab it is Amazon.com. Again, $13.46. So please check it out. Grab a copy and see if it's something that can fit within what you do at your school. Now, for my second point, I remember when I was a kid, I had this Batman hat, and this was during the time where the Michael Keaton Batman movie was about to come out, and I was so excited about that movie coming out. So I had this Batman hat, and It was one of those hats with the adjustable straps. And you look on the back of it, it says it's printed on this plastic strap. One size fits all. And so I adjusted the thing to fit what I thought would fit my head. And I put it on and it just didn't fit right. It was loose. And so I went up a notch and then it was too tight. And so I went a notch below what I thought would fit and it was too loose. And so I had this cool hat and I loved the way it looked and I wanted to wear it. But when I put it on, it just didn't look right because it said it was one size fits all, but ultimately it was not. And so I can't remember what I did. I don't think I wore the hat because it just looked funny on my head because it just didn't fit me. It wasn't made for me. And that leads me to my second point. Second point of my philosophy is that education is not one size fits all. The most important things in life are not one size fits all. And no, I'm not saying that hat was a very important thing in my life. Well, to me it was back then because I was a kid, but you know what I'm getting at. The most important things in life are not one size fits all. There's so many things, so many variables that need to be taken into consideration. And I feel like we dismiss a lot of those variables in education. And so this is really my thing. And I really get up on my soapbox with this. It's just, you know, with our students, we should understand that, yes, there are some wonderful programs out there. There's some awesome programs out there. And here's the thing. Some of these awesome programs that work well in one place, they don't work well in another place. And the only way to really figure that out is by talking to the students, figuring out who they are, and really using that information to determine what would be best for them. And I feel that this extra step is not taken enough in many of our schools around the country. I needed, going back to my hat, I guess I was pretty broken up about that hat, but going back to my hat, I needed someone to measure my head and make a hat for me, make something for me that takes my bumpy big head, that takes my bumpy big head into consideration. I needed something for me. And so it is with our students. They need something that's going to take them into account. That's going to take into account who they are, how they learn best, all those things into account. Okay, so that was number two. On to number three. So this one is going to ruffle a few feathers. And again, it's at Marvin Bird or mbird@visionchasers.com if you would like to discuss. I think that we need to renew our minds in terms of the role of instructional leadership, because I believe it's a responsibility that is too important to be taken lightly. Now, going back to No Child Left Behind, as a result of No Child Left Behind, principals are required to be instructional leaders. Now, this responsibility has been added onto the other responsibilities of an administrator, and I'm sure many administrators out there are giving me an amen on that. So the responsibilities have increased, but unfortunately, their time hasn't increased. Now, what this does, I believe, is it waters down their effectiveness as an instructional leader. And what it does ultimately, again, I believe, is it yields to a strict adherence to an instructional philosophy. Now, I'm not going to list any, for example, because I don't mean to offend. I'm just trying to make a point. So let's say, for example, a district is struggling with literacy. Those third grade reading scores are not very good. And we know what that is a potential indicator of for the future. So over the summer, they decide to adopt this literacy program. And so once the teachers come back, they sell that to the community, they okay it by not giving a whole bunch of pushback on it. And so the teachers come back, administrators say, this is what we're going to do. We're going to adhere to this literacy philosophy and instructional method, and this is what we're going to do. Well, that's fine. But what if this literacy program doesn't fit the needs of the particular students in this district? So perhaps this literacy program, it worked in XYZ school district. That's 100% fine, but perhaps it won't work for the students in this particular district. And the people who, and I submit to you that the people who are going to understand this intimately are the people who spend the most time with the students, and those are the teachers. And so going back to what I talked about, how the school district, it's based on the relationship amongst all these different groups of people. Well, if the teachers are looking at this and they're understanding that, wait a second, this program, it's not going to fit the needs of the students that we have. And then you have administrators saying, well, we need to take care of literacy, so we're going to stick with this program. Now you understand, when we go back to that analogy of the team that's rowing, now perhaps you don't have these members rowing at the same pace, because perhaps there is a bit of disagreement about the direction in which the team is going. Now, technically, instructional leaders, most of the time they're going to be the administrators. But again, as I said before, I think we need to renew our minds in terms of instructional leadership, not only because of the time factor. I think that, and again, this is going to ruffle some feathers, but I think that I have my doctorate. I have my doctorate, and eventually I will become an administrator. But the thing that, so when I do become an administrator, I'm going to be given the title of instructional leader. Well, the thing that's going to, the difference between me as an administrator, instructional leader, and a teacher is simply going to be, I would submit to you, it's going to be the books that I read, articles that I read, and conferences that I go to. Well, I submit to you that teachers can do the same thing. And also, keep this in mind. A teacher is in the position of being able to research, teach, reflect, and teach again. I want to hear what that person has to say. I want to take a look at that data, and I don't want a 55-page PDF. I just want it in one paragraph. Tell me what happened. Did the kids get it or not? Did they get better or not? I think the most important role of an instructional leader is to create an environment that's conducive to allowing teachers to discover how they can teach effectively and really just multiply that. Let's get that written down somewhere so someone else can follow that path. It doesn't necessarily have to be some outside organization has some kind of teaching plan. It doesn't have to be that. You've got some experts in your own districts, in your own buildings. They're there. Use them. And so we need to be very careful with instructional leadership, because I think that adding or bestowing this role upon someone who becomes an administrator can lead to poor leadership in this area, because when it's all said and done, an administrator, in order to keep their job, is going to say, you know what, we need to adhere to this policy. Let's teach it this way. I know it may not be the best for our students, but let's just continue down this path and do this because this is what the district wants. Instead, leaders are supposed to multiply. They're supposed to multiply the gifts and talents of the teachers they work with. But they can't multiply if they don't have the tools, if they don't have the time, if they don't have the flexibility that's necessary in order to multiply the gifts and talents of the people that report to them. Instructional leadership is about intimately knowing who your teachers are and what their strengths are as instructors. And it's about helping them improve upon those strengths. Not weaknesses, but strengths. Because I would rather have you go from a 6 to a 9 than spend time going from a 3 to a 5. So, for example, if someone is pretty darn good at flipping their classroom, as an instructional leader, you want to get in there and find out, okay, what are some ways we can improve upon this awesome method of instruction? Because when you do that, you're embracing who that person is as a teacher, you're looking at them, and you're holding conversations about something that pertains to them and them alone. You're treating them as an individual, as opposed to a cog in a machine that's going this one way, adhering to this one instructional method. Okay, so that was number three. So hopefully I haven't offended too many of you. But again, I'm open to discussion. I want to discuss with you. So again, that is at Marvin Bird and mbird at visionchasers.com if you'd like to discuss. That leads us to the fourth point that I have in my philosophy of education here. Number four is simple. Number four is simplicity is key. It will always be true that if you keep things simple, then your plans have a better chance of succeeding. Now, definitely, you need the proper planning and you need to be able to articulate your vision and do all those things. But mostly, if you keep it simple, you've got a better chance of ending up where you want to end up. Now, allow me to get up on my soapbox here. Since the Department of Education has been created, there have been more hands involved in our educational system. And as I said before, it's just very difficult. The politicization of education makes it extremely difficult to keep things simple and do what is right. That's what I believe. And I know that it's a lot easier said than done in terms of removing the federal government from education. And definitely, let me be clear, the federal government does many good things as it relates to education. There are just areas in which I would hope that they would consider my definition of a school district and pull back and assist communities in taking care of their schools and helping their students succeed. Number five. All right, we're going to talk about bad teachers. A bad teacher is one who doesn't have the passion to teach and help people. A bad teacher refuses to adapt to the structure set forth by their administrators. And number three, a bad teacher is the same year after year. A bad teacher must be removed. Now, I'm going to make a statement that is going to, again, ruffle some feathers, but I believe this. I once had a mentor tell me that he was a head principal, building principal, and his superintendent every year would call him in and say, you know, give me the names of three teachers who really need some improvement. They're really low and they just need to get better, desperately need to get better. And so he'd give them the three names and the superintendent would say, all right, I want you to work with them, document it, and if they don't get better, if there's no improvement, then it's time for them to go. And I know that really sounds cutthroat when you think of, you know, these people people who need to get better. You know, they've probably got families and bills and things like that. But when it comes to education, and this is the hard line that I take, you know, education, schools don't exist to employ people. They exist to teach students. And I know it's important that, you know, people have financial responsibilities. That is also important. But when teachers sign that contract, there are certain things that they're saying that they're going to do. And when they choose not to do those things, then they are forfeiting their employment. And that's just honest. This is being honest, not trying to be cutthroat. I don't like seeing people lose their jobs. But, you know, as a teacher, I don't like it when people use sentences like, we need to get rid of these bad teachers. And so they use that point to push some kind of sweeping reform that changes things for everybody. There is not a significant amount of bad teachers in one particular school building. However, when a bad teacher is identified, there needs to be a plan put in place to help them get better. And if it's not working out, then they need to be let go. And it shouldn't take so long for this to happen. I've seen teachers, I've had teachers coming up. I've had teachers who are on the brink of retirement, and they would show videos each and every day. My goodness gracious. I had a band teacher who was close to retirement, and my goodness, I don't think he even knew our names. He would just give us our packets and go do whatever. And there was actually a fight in that classroom, and he wasn't in there. And so the two kids had a fight, and they were actually able to finish the fight. And then once they finished the fight, they got back to work, and the teacher comes back in the room, and he had no idea that a fight just took place in his classroom. He should have been identified and eliminated long before he was able to teach my class. Again, number five, bad teachers who stay around, bad teachers who are able to stick around, that's the fault of administrators. Administrators need to step up, document, and get those teachers out of there. If and only if it is clear that they're not getting better. There are people out there who are teaching who bless their heart. You know, they thought that they wanted to help kids and change the world in that way. And that's fine. But if they can't manage the classroom, then they've got to go. Because ultimately, they're doing more harm than good. It is poor leadership that allows bad teachers to stick around. Now, before I moved on to my sixth and final point, I want to make you aware of a couple things. My website is marvinbird.com. Again, that's with the Y, marvinbird.com. Now, again, there you will find any of the latest news related to education. You'll also find professional development tools and tips to help you along the way. I believe that the best professional development is the professional development that you seek out yourself. And that's definitely no disrespect to what any school district is offering. School districts offer some awesome professional development. And then again, some districts don't. But a lot of us in the educational field, we believe that the best learning occurs when the student is leading that learning, the student is pursuing that knowledge. And I think the same holds true for us as professionals. So again, please check that website out if you want to further your professional development and increase your knowledge base on what is going on currently in the educational field. Also, I am so proud to let you know that on marvinbird.com as well, there is a blog. It's called The Journey. It's called The Journey. And I'm really proud of this because, again, it kind of piggybacks on my book, Make It Plain: Keys to Being a Successful High School Student, in that the journey is written to students. It's in student-friendly language, and it uses a lot of metaphors to kind of hook in the students to help them really understand the concepts. And a lot of the concepts are character building, principles of studying, principles of success, goal setting, and really overall, all of those soft skills that our students are going to need in order to be successful once they graduate. And so one of the things that I do when I work with small groups of students is I will go to that journey blog and I will print out one of those posts and we'll discuss it. And there is room for a lot of conversation. And I encourage you to check that out. Again, it's called The Journey, and that's the blog. And it's on marvinbird.com. You'll see it. It's on the front page. Also on that front page is my calendar. You'll see where I'll be appearing. I do workshops. One of my workshops is for parents. It's called How to Help Your Teen Graduate with Purpose. I also do a study skills workshop for students. Again, when I was in school, I didn't know how to study. I achieved a 3.4 GPA in high school, but I was given a lot of those grades simply because of my behavior. And also, I wasn't pushed to really take it to the next level. I wasn't challenged, and therefore, I really wasn't ready once I got to college. So I encourage you to check that out. Again, that's marvinbird.com. I promise you, you will not be disappointed. Okay, so for my sixth and final point, wow, shows you how much I know. I was able to get all of these in within the hour. That's awesome. So here is my sixth and final point. I remember when I got my first teaching job in Joplin, Missouri. I'm a Joplin Eagle at heart because I got my first teaching job there. And Joplin is a small town. in some ways a lot. I really do miss it because I remember when I would go out about and I would go to Walmart and my students would see me and parents would see me as well. And it was just amazing how their faces would light up. It was like I was a rock star in small town Joplin, Missouri. And what really resonated with me when I was out and about was the fact that as a teacher, I was respected simply because I held that occupation. I was held in high regard because of that. And I think there's just something really pure about that. And I think not only does that happen in small towns, but it happens in big cities as well. Whenever I meet someone and they find out what I do for a living, their face just really lights up and they just really appreciate the job that I do. And given the fact that we are entrusted with caring for and teaching and helping to shape the future of the loved ones of these individuals that decide to send their children to us, it is incumbent upon us as educators to always, and this is my number sixth point, it is incumbent upon us as educators to always deal with truth. Always deal with truth. So let's jump into this so you can really understand what I mean by this. And for the most part, when we discuss truth, what we're talking about is this term, courageous conversations. That's mostly that's what we're talking about, courageous conversation. So I live in St. Louis, Missouri, and you know, ever since August 2014 to the end of 2014, there has been a lot of discussion about race as it relates to the justice system here in St. Louis and around the country. Race is something that must be discussed. Yes, I know it's uncomfortable at times, but it must be discussed, especially if you're working in a district that has a high minority population. It is an absolute must. There shouldn't be a day that goes by that you don't have a positive discussion about race. Because I remember when I was taking education classes, I remember they used to say, you want to know everything that you can possibly know about the students before they enter the classroom. And that is so true. If you want to really build that relationship on an individual level, really get to know the students, race matters. Race matters, and it doesn't have to be a negative thing when we discuss race, but race makes people unique. It makes them who they are. And I'm not saying that it makes them better than anybody else. It's unique to them, and it matters. When you start to break down walls of comfort as it relates to discussing race, then you can really go places and step into discomfort and really make some progress, because some of the most famous people throughout history became famous in positions of discomfort. So I'll leave it right there as it relates to race for now, but definitely we're going to come back to this because it's my desire that all people are able to openly and freely discuss this. Also, when we talk about dealing with the truth and having a courageous conversation, I believe inequality is a truth. Yes, inequality exists. However, in the United States, schools are supposed to be the place where inequality is eliminated through teaching and proper course correction. And I emphasize that course correction, especially for middle and high school, when students are able to make more and more decisions outside of the shadow of their parents. What I see, and I really don't like, is I don't like when schools decide to forfeit their responsibility of correcting course. And by that, I mean, if a student is not doing what they're supposed to do, if they're misbehaving, if they are not showing the proper progress in order to advance to the next grade. And I know a lot of people, you don't like where I'm going with this. Then it's incumbent upon the school to step in and say, hey, this is not going to end very well unless we take these actions. And I believe at times leaders are choosing not to take those actions because they have to get these students through, across the stage, and out of the district. And when that is the approach, it only breeds inequality, because going back to my ship metaphor, when a ship makes a slight degree a slight degree turn to the left or to the right off their proper course, then what that's going to do is over time, that's going to lead the ship into a place far, far away from the initial destination. We can't let this happen to our students. We also need to deal with the truth as it relates to student accountability. I believe that all students are not held accountable as they should be. I think it's ironic that as we've seen more politicization of education, we've seen the standards actually drop. Certainly on paper, it says the curriculum is going to be challenging, but it's difficult to do that at the same time while the sword of Damocles hangs over the head of the school district to meet these benchmarks each year. I believe that grade inflation and social promotion have covered the truth. And again, we can definitely discuss those. I know there's a lot of you who disagree with that last statement, but that's at mbird and mbird@visionchasers.com. Please, let's discuss. So the last point as it relates to dealing with truth is a lack of parental involvement. The lack of parental involvement is true, and it's been notated in the literature. And it's also true that the parental involvement is a major, major indicator in the success or lack thereof of students. And there's all kinds of reports that detail how white schools have more parental involvement than predominantly minority schools. And we have to ask the question, why is that? And again, that's not me getting on parents. That's just me asking the question and wondering what can we do to increase that parental involvement and give those kids a better chance to succeed. We've got to go there. And Obama himself has said it. And I know politicians, they have to word it in a kind of way that doesn't ruffle many feathers. But he said basically that a recent $18 billion pledge to support education is not going to make a difference if parents don't parent. And here's what he said. He said this in 2009, actually. He said, there is no program or policy that can substitute for a mother or father who will attend those parent-teacher conferences or help with homework or turn off the TV, put away the video games, and read to their child. Responsibility for our children's education must begin at home. And we can't run away from that, parents. All right, and so the last one here is the achievement gap. As it relates to truth, we need to really understand the achievement gap. The gap between minority students and their white counterparts still exists. We can make a lot of progress in the breaking of the achievement gap if we embrace truth. We need to really, really understand why this achievement gap is still here. And a lot of it has to deal with race, parental involvement, inequality, lack of time, and all those things. But I submit to you that we need to start breaking some rules here. I think it is really unfortunate that we have to watch a student, a minority student, earn a poor third grade reading score and really understand what that means for him or her. And while that student is in the same district, they just go through and that reading score stays stagnant or it even drops. And we know throughout that time, as they're 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, we know what that means for them. I think that it's just so unfortunate. And we've tried many things. We've tried a great many things to stop that. However, remember what I told you about a school district. That community is going to have to work together. What are those relationships within those various groups of people that make up the school district? They're going to be the ones that have to step up and break some rules and get involved. And I don't have too much time to go into it further now, but I submit to you that in order to get these stakeholders and the rest of the community involved, we're going to have to give them some responsibility. And by responsibility, I'm talking money. They are going to have to be given a seat at the table and some hardcore responsibility so they can take ownership of what's happening in the local school district. So I know those things are all difficult, but remember this, there is freedom in truth. And in truth, there is freedom. We have got to. We must. It is a must. We must embrace the truth and deal with the truth, because when you're dealing with the truth, then you can really get things done. Then you can really solve some issues. So the last thing I want to tell you about is I want to tell you about Vision Chasers. Vision Chasers is a company that I created for students to talk to them, motivate them. And right now we have a YouTube channel for Vision Chasers. So if you go to YouTube/Vision Chasers, what you will see is you will see that I've got a number of videos with yours truly in them. So I've got videos right now. I've got motivational videos. My latest video to motivate students, that is success only costs effort. Success only costs effort. And again, in those videos, I'm speaking to students. So I encourage you to check those out. And those are really good things to start the class. Let's say you're a math teacher, for example, and you're starting a concept that is pretty challenging and time consuming, maybe you can pop in one of these, and they're not that long. They're maybe 3 to 5 minutes long. So maybe you can pop in one of those just to light that fire and get them going. Also, if you're a history teacher, I have a lot of, because I'm a history teacher myself, and I flip my classroom, and I've recorded my own videos. So I've got a number of videos on there, as well as worksheets for most of the videos. I encourage you to check that out. Again, that is YouTube/Vision Chasers, and that's the channel, and that's where you can find all those videos. And I know that they will be very helpful to you. Well, that is the end of our first show, and I just thank you so much once again for listening, and look for another edition of the Marvin Bird Show on the 3rd of each month, and we'll just see how that goes. I encourage you to please interact with me. Again, that's at mbird and mbird@visionchasers.com. Please, 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 if you like what you hear, please give us a thumbs up in the comment section. Well, that's our show for the day. Please, again, check marvinbird.com for the latest in news and professional development. And also, don't forget about the Journey blog to help motivate your students. And don't forget, as with anything, as with any initiative that you're looking to start, any goals that you have for your district or building, remember, it can be done. Thanks. Bye.